Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you today. First, of course, I will share with you some of the things going on in and around the city and the country and share a recipe with you. But I also have a wonderful guest on, Dorina Allen from the Ballymaloe Cookery School, to talk about the literary festival that is going on in Ireland in just a couple of weeks. And so that will be the annual Food and Drinks Literary Festival, and Dorina Allen will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, I just want to share with you some things going on in and around the news. I want to tell you that Tuesday evening, I joined Stephen Ritz at the launch of his new book, The Power of a Plant. And it was a great reception. It was at a new venue called Project Farmhouse, which is right down in the Union Square area of Manhattan. And it's a great venue for new foodie events. And they just opened this past Saturday. I was not able to go to the grand opening, but I really wanted to see the space. And so I was really happy to go to the opening or the launch party of Stephen Ritz's The Power of a Plant. And Stephen Ritz is a teacher in the Bronx working with inner city kids who are in a very underserved community, and he has changed the way they learn using gardens and plants as a way to teach core curriculum. He has motivated kids to want to come to school, to change how they eat. They've gone from the test scores, I think he said, were up 45%. They've gone from 10% graduation to 99% graduation rates. I mean, it's just amazing, the power of a plant. And so check out his new book. You can buy it on Amazon. And check out Stephen Ritz's TEDx talk. He's just a force of nature and really just so inspirational, and he's just changing the lives of so many kids. And then yesterday I had the privilege of being on the Brian Lehr Show on public radio, talking about the school lunch program. And there was a interesting article that had come out on Monday on the Washington Post talking about how the Trump administration, under Purdue's guidance, are looking to weaken the nutrition standards of the school lunch program that Michelle Obama had put into place. And so they're trying to roll it back so that they no longer have to use whole grains, they don't have to worry about the salt content, and those that care really are up in arms because she worked so hard to improve the nutritional standards of the school lunch program and try to bring whole grains and better foods into the school lunch program. And they are just, turning it back. I mean, anything that has to do with health care, we have to start with these kids young. And so many of the kids, this is one of the things that I really try to impress on people, for so many kids, the school lunch program is their food security. There are millions and millions of kids living in an insecure food world, and they count on their lunch school program to give them a good meal, and even not only lunch, for many it's breakfast as well. And the quality of these meals really makes a difference. And the Trump administration is just not getting that. And so I was able to go on and talk about the school lunch program that I ran at the Waldorf School, and it was joined by Chef Daniel from NoMa, who has started a chef's brigade in Old London, Connecticut. He's revamping the school lunch program there. And it's just, it just is an issue that, as parents, we cannot let up on. We really have to push to keep school lunch programs healthy for not just our kids, but for the kids that don't have any other choice. So anyway, there was also a really interesting article in the Washington Post about the organic dairy labels. And we assume that we can trust the USDA organic labeling. And I was shocked to find out that there are so few inspectors that the way they do it is they allow the big factory farms, even factory dairy farms, like Aurora is the one that they really spoke about, who provides organic milk for Costco and Walmart and some of the big box stores, that they hire their own inspectors and that they are not really meeting the regulations of cows grazing and, having time outdoors, et cetera. And the testing of the milk proves it. The quality of the milk, the nutrient value is not up to the standards of organic milk. And it's really interesting to be able to see the difference between the nutritional content in organic milk versus non-organic milk. And this organic milk from Aurora Dairy is right on par with the conventional milk. And so it was really interesting to know, and it just once again supports people's belief that you can't just trust the labeling. We really need to do our research. And there's, thank God, organizations like the Cornucopia Institute that does a great job, and they rate all of the organic dairy companies, and you can go on and see that. Environmental Working Group, they have their Dirty Dozen list and their Clean 15 list. They also rate personal care products. But we really all need to know that we are living in a world and in our country, a government that cares way more about corporations and the bottom line profit of the corporations that make contributions to their campaigns than they do about their constituents, the people that they're supposed to be caring for. And so it is really prudent that all of us stay informed and become active citizens to promote the kind of things that we want to see. And I just can't impress that enough on all of you. So I have, as always, on my website ways that you can take action. I have lots of different petitions that you can go on and sign. One is to stop the Filthy Food Act, and that's through the Center of Science and the Public Interest. Another is to try to remove junk food at the checkouts of supermarkets. They always put the candy and the junk food right there. So if you're shopping with your kids or even with yourself and you happen to be hungry, which so many of us do go to the supermarket hungry, you're not tempted by all the bad foods right up there at the register. And there's lots more petitions, but please check out my website at IE Green and sign some of these and support good food in our communities. We really need to do that. The school food issue is just one that, Tom Colicchio is also really working on to improve the school lunch programs. Ann Cooper has been doing it for years. She's also known as the Renegade Chef Lady. but the Hunger Free Students Bill of Rights Act, I have a link to that so that you can sign that petition. But with the rise of obesity and diabetes in children, we really need to start at the beginning. And that's one of the reasons I love Stephen Ritz so much, because he's really getting these kids when they're young and making such a big impression on them, and it's just great. So I want to share with you some things that are going on in around the city that are worthy of your attention and participation in. Tonight there is the film series that Sustainable Molloy College puts on. Tonight they're screening the documentary Plastic Paradise. And with these documentaries, they put out a full vegan dinner. They ask for a $5 suggested donation, but it's also free if you don't have that. So that's at Sustainable Molloy's campus in Farmingdale. So check that out. This weekend, the River Keeper is having their big Hudson sweep, which is a huge cleanup where they get volunteers to come down to all different coastlines of the Hudson River and help clean that up. So go onto the riverkeeper.org/sweep to sign up and volunteer. North Shore Land Alliance is also having one of their walk in the woods, and this is going to be at the Roosevelt Preserve also on May 6th at 8 o'clock in the morning. So you can actually do both if you feel so motivated. And the Coalition for Healthy School Food, which is a great organization that's promoting plant-based foods in schools, they're having a huge fundraiser, a 5-borough bike ride for healthy school food. And you can register for that online through their website, the Coalition for Healthy School Food. So check that out. Next week, May 10th, the River Fund, which is the food pantry that I partner with when I cook for the homeless for all of the holidays. They're a wonderful, wonderful nonprofit organization, and they have a program called From Cradle to College. And they realize that poverty is not just something that happens, you know, when you are a young adult, but poverty starts really young, and it starts with education, and or it starts at the cradle and goes through education. They know that if you don't go to college, you're not going to be able to pull yourself out of this poverty cycle. And so they really support these kids. You know, as I know all of you have heard, you know, Cuomo has put out this free tuition for New York State and CUNY schools, but the reality is it doesn't cover the books or room and board for kids who are really poor. So it's great for middle-income kids, but for kids that are really poor, the difference of $400 for school books can force them to drop out of school. So the River Fund is doing this big fundraiser, and they help fill that gap to make it possible for these kids to stay in school. So come out and support their Cradle to College program. It's at the penthouse at Dream Downtown, which is on West 16th Street. I believe tickets are $100 or $200, but it is tax deductible and it goes to such a good cause. So that's Wednesday night, May 10th from 7 to 10:30. I will be there because, like I said, this is an organization that's very close to my heart. So if you can make it, I'd love to see you there. Also, May 11th, CUNY Urban Food Policy Forum is having a event called Building a Food Movement in New York in the Age of Trump. And this is one of their breakfast events at CUNY, and it is a wonderful, they're wonderful events. I go to them often. They put out a nice, healthy breakfast, and it's promoted by the CUNY Graduate School of Public Health and Health Policy at 55 West 125th Street. That's from 7 to 10:30 in the morning. They have a whole panel discussion about building a food movement in the, you know, new administration. So if you can make it to that, please come down. There's lots more on my website, but I don't really want to take any more time. Just two more events that are really close to my heart is also their slow food events. As many of you know, I co-chair our local slow food chapter called Slow Food North Shore. And we're having two events next month. On June 16th, we are having a farm tour of the Brooklyn Grange rooftop farm at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And that's from, it's on a Friday, and it's, you have to get off work early because it's from 3:30 to 4:30. Followed by that, we're going to Rooftop Reds, which is a rooftop vineyard also in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. So we're going to go from the farm to the vineyard, and then we're going to follow it up with a gourmet pizza dinner right there on the rooftop. So that should be a great event. $40 for members, $50 for non-members. And the next day, we're having a summer solstice event at Restoration Farm. And we'll have live music. It's a potluck. Rising Tide Natural Foods is providing food for a cocktail hour or hors d'oeuvre hour. So that should be delicious as well. So I look forward to seeing many of you at those upcoming events. Okay, so I want to share with all of you my recipe for this week. It's a roasted tempeh and cauliflower with green beans in lemon wine. And you're going to start by preheating the oven to 400 degrees. The ingredients you need is 2 packages of 3-grain tempeh or any tempeh that you like, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1 tablespoon chopped garlic, zest of 1/2 lemon, pinch of salt, 1 head of cauliflower cut into florets, another 2 tablespoons olive oil, another tablespoon chopped garlic, and a pinch of salt. And you're going to lay both of those out on 2 separate cookie sheets that you line with some parchment paper. cut the tempeh into little cubes, toss it with the olive oil, the chopped garlic, the lemon zest, and the salt, and lay that out onto a cookie sheet. You can either do two cookie sheets at one time, or you can reuse the same cookie sheet and do the same with the cauliflower, roasting that in the oven with the olive oil, the garlic, and the pinch of salt. While those things are roasting, you're going to stir-fry some of your greens. You need one onion sliced into crescent moons, 2 cups of green beans, zest the other half of the lemon, juice of one lemon, 1/2 cup of white wine, 18 hot whole sweet piquante peppers. Those come in a jar marinated in some vinegar, and they're delicious, and I added those to this dish. 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1/2 cup of parsley, 2 tablespoons water, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 1 tablespoon pine nuts, 1/2 lemon, and 1/4 teaspoon of salt. And that's for a little bit of a sauce that we're going to put on top afterwards. So you have the tempeh and the cauliflower roasting. Meanwhile, you're going to cover the bottom of a wok with some olive oil. Sauté the onions until they're translucent. Add the green beans and cook those for 5 minutes. Then add the tempeh and the cauliflower that you removed from the oven. Add that into the wok. Add the white wine, the lemon zest, and the lemon juice. Stir that up. Cook it for a couple of minutes. Then add the hot peppers and cook those until the green beans come to the desired tenderness you want. I like them to still be crispy and bright green in color. Then add the salt and pepper to taste. And then you're going to make a little sauce in a mini food processor with the parsley, the lemon, the olive oil, the pine nuts, the water, and the salt. And just buzz that for a few minutes until you have a smooth, bright green sauce. And just drizzle that over the vegetables. I served it on a bed of quinoa, which was delicious. It had that nice little crunch to it. And it just looked beautiful. So, of course, if you make this recipe, please share with me your feedback. I'd love to hear from all of you. And enjoy it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest to all of you. Dorina Allen is a chef, author, and one of the owners of the Ballymaloe Cookery School in Ireland. And she started the school back in 1983 with her brother, Rory. And they've had thousands of students pass through their doors since then. She has authored dozens of cooking books. Her latest is called 30 Years at Ballymaloe. And it's a celebration of 30 years of the cookery school. And for the last 5 years, she's been one of the organizers and hosts of the International Food and Drinks Literary Festival. And it's also known as Lit Fest 17. And it's a great event, and I can't wait to get myself there one of these years. But right now I wanted to invite her on so she could tell us all about it and encourage many of you to come on down for it. Dorina, are you with me?
I absolutely am, and I've been like totally fascinated listening. I was listening to the earlier bit of your program there. It gave me a huge insight into what's happening on your food scene in America and the amazing work that's being done behind the scenes in what sounds like increasingly challenging times. But so I'm full of admiration for what all of you do.
It is challenging times, and it's really a challenge to keep our spirits up, but we do it. And you know, events like what you're putting together help keep us going. So why don't you tell us a little bit? First, tell us a little bit about your cooking school, we'll talk about the Lit Fest Festival.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on. And the cooking school is in the middle of a 100-acre organic farm here down in, on the south coast of Ireland.
Hello?
East of Cork City. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, I can hear you.
Ah, okay, I hear you now.
Yes, good.
Okay, so we'll just cut that part out. Let's start right again.
I don't know what happened. It just suddenly went dead. Yep.
Yeah, so how nice that this is a pre-record and we can cut that out. Okay,
exactly.
So anyway, can you tell us about your cookery school and the Lit Fest that you're getting ready to host?
This will be the fifth year of the Lift House. But, well, the cooking school is in the middle of a 100-acre organic farm down in the south coast of Ireland, east of Cork City, very close to the sea. And we've had the cooking school here, as you've said, since 1983. And students literally come from all over the world to take classes with us here. We do three-month certificate courses in the year, very full-on intensive courses for people who want to earn their living from their cooking and be totally immersed in a what you would call over there a farm-to-table situation. And we also do lots and lots of short courses and forgotten skills courses, and also people, if they're in the area on a holiday or whatever, they can come in for an afternoon cookery demonstration on any day. In fact, one of the forgotten skills courses this morning was how to make butter, cheese and yogurt. We have a little micro dairy here where we can use to show people these for what many people are calling forgotten skills, and how to do, how to build a smoker, smoke your own food, how to do butchery, how to make sourdough bread from scratch in our bread shed, all of that. But we've been, and it's lovely to now that people, and for quite a long time actually, have now been coming from all over the world to what was originally perceived as the land of corned beef and cabbage to learn how to cook, because we have wonderful produce in this country and a pretty amazing food scene actually as well for those who haven't been here for a while.
Yeah, now can you share with me and my listeners, I know you partner with this LitFest with like Kerrygold, for instance, which is all, you know, some of the best grass-fed butter that we can get here in the States.
Absolutely.
And it's not, you know, it's not labeled organic, and yet my understanding is that it doesn't need to be in Ireland, that it is organic just because it's grass-fed and the animals are not fed GMO products. Is that all true?
Yes. Well, basically, we're a very small island. About 80% of our farms are less than 100 acres. And many of them are small family farms where animals would be reared very not intensively in the least. And, of course, we can grow grass like nowhere else in the world. So many of our best foods come from our grass, our dairy products, our meat and our beef and our lamb and so on. And we're producing enough food, actually, on this tiny island to feed over 24 million people, even though there's only 4.5 million of us here. That's really because we're so favored by nature with the fertile land and long growing season. We don't have any shortage of water, thank goodness. And and we have miles of coastline. So we're very favored from that point of view. Yeah.
Can you tell me about the LitFest 2017, and when did you first start the LitFest festival?
Okay. Now this is the fifth year of the LitFest. It was started off by being called a festival, literary festival of food and wine. But now it's grown into a food and drinks literacy festival at Ballymaloe House and the surrounding area, Ballymaloe Cooking School, and also on farm. And this year, each year the theme changes just a little bit. What it began as a sort of food and drinks literary festival has now sort of evolved into this food literacy festival. And really what we're trying to get people to become more familiar with how their food is produced, where it comes from, and issues around food production and consumption. And while we're kind of hosting a whole plethora of events for every age and gender and sway, but basically there'll be both entertainment and, of course, a whole symposium on our food, what's the story as well behind the scenes. So we have top chefs, food writers, people involved in the food scene and food issues, authors, etc., coming literally from all over the world, as we have for the last 5 years. So we've had really this sort of, it's been so fun for me because I've been able to pick up the phone to my food heroes and say, look, we're having a food festival in Ireland, and people fly in literally from all over the world. Would you like to come and be part of it? And so from your side of the world there, you know, Alice Waters has been over, of course, Marta Jeffrey, and then you, I think one of the things you asked me earlier was who are some of my favorite speakers. Well, and last year we also had Francis Malman with us from Argentina, who's kind of the king of fire. And, you know, we've had Renny Redzepi from NOMA. So we've really had the top people. So it's been fantastic for people to be able to come and see these people, in a very non-formal situation where they can wander around. Suddenly you see your food hero walking beside you, or you can listen to them talking or see them cooking, et cetera, over a whole weekend.
Mm-hmm. I saw on the lineup that Brian McGinn is coming over, the director of the Netflix documentary Chef's Table.
Yes, exactly. So we're absolutely delighted that he's coming, and we're hoping that when he's here, he will decide to come back and do some of his films on some of the wonderful young Irish chefs we have at the moment.
Uh-huh. Are any of the chefs that he has done a show on going to be there as well?
We have had, of course, Frances Malman last year, and Remy Redzepi from No Man, and so on. So several have actually been on other years.
Uh-huh. Very cool. Very cool. And Sander Katz, was he there last year?
Oh,
or was
indeed
before?
Sander was. Sander came twice, the King of Fermentation. He's another great hero of ours. We do quite a lot of fermentation courses here at the school, as well as, you know, lots of, you know, butchery and foraging and all of those kinds of things as well. So he was... we had great fun with Sandor, and the other person who's coming again this year is Claudia Roden, lovely Claudia, who's written a standard work on Middle Eastern food, and Joanna Blythman, of course, is coming back again, Christian Pulese from Raleigh and Manfred's in Copenhagen, so, and Jacob Kennedy from Bocca di Lupa in London. We have an incredible sort of lineup, but the whole thing this year, the symposium, which is done a bit like TED lectures that you mentioned earlier on, and is the theme is Our Food, What's the Story? So last year, the theme of the symposium was Our Responsibility. So in these short, very focused presentations, we kind of want the people's minds to focus on, in this case, our responsibility. Each and every one of us has a responsibility, as you spoke about earlier there, to we can make a difference in how we spend our money when we go shopping, and we can really make a huge impact globally on things like food waste, diet-related health issues, food insecurity, global food systems, and, of course, their effect on global warming, not to mention the benefits of passing on life skills to the next generation.
Mm-hmm. When we first met, at Terra Madre many years back, which is the International Slow Food Conference, for those of you that don't know. And
which is life-changing.
You're very involved
people
with
who haven't
slow
been
food in
it.
Ireland, are you not?
Yes, I head up Slow Food in Ireland. We have a Convivia here in East Cork, and I just heard you saying earlier there that you have a Slow Food Convivia in North Shore. So next time I come to New York, I'll link in with you and see whether there's something on, some event on.
Yeah, it's always fun to do that. I know when I travel, wherever I go, I always look up, you know, the city to see if there's a Slow Food event, you know, because it's a connection that we have when you're a food lover. You know, I try to promote slow food all the time and tell people that that's a connection to people around the world that all care about things that you find important, you know, the things you were just talking about.
Yeah, it's really interesting because actually I was in Egypt earlier on this year, and I linked up with the people who head up Slow Food in Egypt, and it was fantastic because they gave me all kinds of tips for, you know, the best places to eat, introduced me to lots of wonderful farmers and food producers and so on that I would not have met otherwise. So it's a terrific network around the world of like-minded people, people like you and I who are really concerned about what's happening in food and really trying to find the best quality food that we can to feed ourselves and our families with, actually, as well. So, and actually, you were talking earlier about the challenge, but the great thing is it's so difficult to find, as you were saying, you know, food that you can trust and food where you can trust the label. But if people can actually manage to grow any little thing for themselves, so they're, even if they're in a high-rise apartment, if they have a little balcony, or all you need in a way to grow something is you need some sort of container, you need some soil or what you would call dirt or compost. You need a seed, you need water, and you need a little time. And then even if it's a few little salad leaves or something, but at least you know they're organic and at least you know they're nourishing and wholesome. And then, mm-hmm. My goodness, will you eat it slowly and enjoy every mouthful. So growing your
right.
own is really something that's not easy for everybody, but once you start, my goodness, it becomes like an addiction. And then you have a different kind of food completely.
Mm-hmm. One thing I was talking about last week was how in America, you know, what people started looking for is quantity over quality, you know, and it became, you know, people started looking for the places that give large portions and, and their thought about really the quality of the food or the taste of the food even was not as important as, you know, getting a lot. And then they eat it because they have so much, they eat it so fast that they're not even really slowing down enough to really savor the flavor, to taste it.
Yeah. In a way, we forget, you know, the importance of the food we eat. We can't do anything about our genes. We are what we were on the moment of conception. But by goodness, we can certainly do something about the quality of the fuel we put in the system to keep it going. And, you know, as you quite rightly say, for a lot of people, cheapness and volume was the only thing that matters. And I know there are indeed people, and you mentioned earlier, many, who actually don't have the luxury of choice. But even people who have the luxury of a bit of choice often don't, it's not a high enough priority. They don't realize, don't really stop to think that our food is what gives us energy, vitality, the ability to concentrate, everything. And so it needs to be a much higher priority in many of our lives. And the other great thing is, of course, if you can't cook, and for many of us, we've been encouraged to learn a set of academic skills over the last couple of decades. And so many people have never seen their mothers cook in a kitchen. And as a result, we've handed over the most important thing, are the food that we eat, and so much depends on it. In a very short time, we've handed over the power over our food choices to four or five multinational corporations who really can't be expected to have our best interest at heart. Why would they? Their main concern, their main responsibility is to their shareholders. So we have to take back responsibility ourselves for our own health and for our vitality and for many other food issues as well. And that's the main theme of the Ballymaloe Literary Festival this year.
Well, that's a great note for us to take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I want to delve in a little bit more to some of the going-ons that are going to be going on at the Literary Festival. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest, chef and author, Darina Allen. Be right back.
Progressive Radio Network, the number one network for those who care about the truth.
Hello, this is Dane Wigington, host for the weekly Global Alert News Hour from GeoengineeringWatch.org. I'm grateful and honored to now be a part of the PRN Radio Network lineup. Every Saturday at 2 p.m. on the Global Alert News Hour, I'll cover the most dire frontline issues and stories which pose the greatest and most immediate threat to us all and to the biosphere on which we depend to support the web of life. I'll stitch these stories together to form a coherent picture of what's unfolding and why, and what each of us can do to help alter the human race's current course of genocide and ecocide. Join me on the show every Saturday at 2 p.m. for a crystal clear look at the ominous horizon that lies before us.
Tune in to the Living Well Show, which will air on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time on PRN, where we will offer the latest insights on natural health care, environmental issues, and all of the other circumstances that help us live well and be well. Join us. We are airing on Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. on PRN.
Let's go into the mountains.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Michael Wald, and I'm proud to announce that I'm the host of a new show right here on PRN every Saturday at 1 o'clock entitled Ask the Blood Detective. And as your friendly neighborhood blood detective, I'll be exploring all the cutting-edge, important health topics, which will include everything from foods to technology to supplementation and how it impacts your current health so that you can either reach health, maintain good health, or shoot for optimal health and longevity. But What is different about this show is that I'll be describing and teaching you how to interpret your own laboratory tests to find hidden nutritional and health meaning when many other healthcare providers fail to do so. So tune in with me every Saturday at 1 o'clock. Ask the Blood Detective. See you soon.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with Dorina Allen talking about the literary festival that is taking place in Ireland in just a few weeks. So, Dorina, can you actually share the dates of the festival with all of us?
Now, the dates of the festival are from the 19th to the 21st of May. So it's over that weekend there. And there's the great thing about it is that it's actually a festival for everybody, for all ages. We have, we have cooking demonstrations. We've got lots of sessions, workshops. We've got a huge big shed fringe festival where there are all kinds of free events going on there as well. But if you go online and look at www.litfest.ie, you'll get the entire program. And we have so much going on. And actually, we're thrilled because it's been chosen by Condé Nast as one of the top food festivals in the world to actually go to. So people are literally flying in from all over the world, from New York and Tokyo and San Francisco, and even from Sydney to come to it, actually. So it's such a blast. It was tremendous fun, but also there's a whole underlying, great ethic behind it, where people are learning about food issues. And you're right in the middle of a 100-acre organic farm and gardens here, really extensive gardens close to the sea, so you can do all kinds of foraging on the seashore and in the woods and, see all the animals, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the symposium, I know, at Terra Madre, there's always so many different talks going on at the same time that sometimes it's hard because you can't go to everything that you want to. And also logistics, things are far apart from each other. How is it situated, at the Molloy School?
The logistics were always a slight difficulty, aren't they? And again, we have several things running concurrently, but we try to have it in such a way that they're completely different theme things. But it takes place at Ballymaloe House. That's a country house hotel and restaurant east of Cork City, out in the country. And also in the grain store at Ballymaloe, which is a wonderful sort of theater where the symposium takes place. The fringe festival with all of these different extraordinary events and the market and all sorts of things, that's in the grain store at Ballymaloe, a huge big grain store that literally is about, the big shed it's called, which is as big as an airport hangar almost. And then the cooking school is about 2 miles away, closer to the sea in Shanagarry, in the middle of this farm as well. There are two farms, and basically there are shuttle buses going backwards and forwards all the time. And then the gardens are open to the public all the time as well. There are shuttle buses going backwards and forwards all the time, exactly.
And how do you find the time to be able to focus on, you're the main planner for this whole huge event, right?
I have a bit of a team behind me as well. My brother, Rory O'Connell, of course, who is co-founder, and then Rebecca, she also helps as well, so Rebecca Cronin. So there'll be another four or five, six people drafted in next week. For the next couple of weeks, they'll be working on it as well, putting in all sorts of installations and setting up the whole event. And it's such a blast. We all have great fun together. And this event is, we don't have any VIP tent or anything. It's all very you know, everybody sort of just wanders around, all the celebrities wander around with all of the rest of us, and you say hello, meet them and chat and say hello and so on. So it's there's something kind of really extraordinarily special about it. There's a really extraordinarily special vibe. And then it's like the other great thing is a sort of shop window for Ireland and what's happening on the Irish food scene as well. Because originally I had a sort of extra agenda where, you know, we invited all these wonderful published authors, cookbook authors and people. And there's also a wonderful drinks theatre, by the way, with some of the top drink producers in the world, winemakers, craft brewers, and, you know, cider makers, whiskey producers, all of that come as well. So that brings people, the top people from all over the world in that area in too. So it's just, there's an amazing kind of buzz and then, of course, it's great food. So I was saying, earlier agenda was when I invited all these wonderful authors, award-winning authors, we're not just talking about chiclet cooking and cookbooks, it's just, you know, lots of the authors like Marta Jeffrey and Claudia and Stephanie Alexander, Alice Waters, all of these, they all, many of them so scholarly and so on. And then when they came to Ireland, sometimes rather doubtful about the food, and when they come here and they taste the food and they think, oh my goodness, this is quite different than our perception. So all of them have a pen in their hand, the food writers or cookbook writers, whatever, and they go back and then spread the word about what's happening in Ireland. So that's really nice too.
Mm-hmm. You know, in my circle, it's being an environmentalist and, you know, caring so much about, you know, climate change and factory farms in this country. I mean, I totally get that your food scene is different than the factory food scene we have here in America.
Oh, yeah, but, so, you know, everything is getting, in many countries, it's getting a little bit more intensive all the time and so on, yeah.
Yeah. How much do you have to work to be aware of the quality of your food? Is it the same type of upward battle as it is here, do you think?
And well, also, basically,
I'm sorry. Let me just finish. Is there also any, is there a movement for people eating less meat to try to combat the greenhouse gas emissions that are produced by all the meat?
Yes, those issues are very topical here now, and particularly where we produce a lot of beef and so on, and export 90% of our beef. So we have a lot of beef animals and dairy cattle and, as well. But remember that animals that are fed on grass, which they were supposed to be, these animals are meant to be ruminants. They were never really meant
right.
to be fed on grain. They produce much, much less you know, carbon and so on,
methane,
and so
right.
on, and yes, methane and so on. So basically, that's it's less of a problem, but that certainly is an issue that's being widely discussed over here as well. So overall, I think we all realise that those who are reasonably affluent have probably been eating far more meat than we actually need to over the last number of years. So, and that plants, you know, vegetables overall and grains need to be a greater part of our diet than just meat alone. So that's very much part of the consciousness.
It is. Good. I'm so glad to hear that.
Now, we have wonderful fish as well, remember, because we are an island nation. So we have wonderful fish from our cold waters too. So we're very favoured in that direction. But actually, we talked earlier a little bit about the cooking school. One of the things we've put on this year, it's the first one's actually coming up from the beginning of June to the middle of July. And this is a 6-week sustainable sustainable and healthy food program. And this will be using all the resources of the farm and the gardens and the greenhouses, as well as the cooking school and the dairy and the butchery and the smokery, all of that, all of those resources for people who want to learn, go back and learn how food is produced and how to live sustainably and to take back control over their own food and how it's produced. And it's sold out. I mean, we're full for this one now. We do have a waiting list, but there's a real craving, and you really touched on this earlier, for people to be able to learn again about exactly how the food they're eating is produced. I mean, and you know where it comes from, and to try to actually manage, take back responsibility for that themselves. And it's not easy, but the more you know about growing and cooking and so on, the easier it is. So learning how to cook and learning how to grow something yourself, learning how to keep a few hens. I mean, I know in Manhattan there, but out in Brooklyn, I know lots of people with hens. Of course, I've been to Brooklyn Grange, to the rooftop garden and so on there. But basically, there is a craving to relearn again. And many of the people who are booked on that course actually are, in fact, Americans. And they want hands-on, they want to be able to relearn the skills again to take back control over their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that too, more and more. I mean, we're kind of homesteading here. I'm not actually in Manhattan. I'm 30 minutes outside of Manhattan. So we have a couple acres, and, you know, my husband and I, we raise all of our own vegetables in season. I mean, of course, we don't grow in the winter.
Yeah.
And we have bees, but I haven't, you know, as a vegetarian, I haven't taken on any animals, but other than the bees.
Yes.
Even the bees, I felt a necessity, you know, if I want pollinators and I want...
Well, it's really important to have bees. And DJ, I know there are lots of bees in the cities. Because I'm sure all of your listeners know that bee colonies are dying all over the world. There are various reasons for it, obviously, not least some of those nicotinoid sort of group of pesticides,
right,
which they are trying to ban at the moment. But also sometimes bees, particularly in your country, a lot of bees are taken and just put into, say, orange orchards or into cherry orchards, something, and they only have one type of food, so to speak. Whereas in nature, they would have had a much more diverse diet, and that would have, like any of us, the more diverse our diet, the healthier our gut flora and so on. So that's one of the problems. So if anybody who can keep a few bees, and bees are not the only pollinators, basically are really contributing to mankind overall, actually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's the best honey. I mean, when you make your own honey, it's just so great. And then the byproducts are fun, too. I've been making lip balm.
And also you have the antibodies of your own area, which is very important to give you resistance to disease and all of that. Because nowadays people eat very, very little local food. Years ago you might have eaten local honey, you might have had eggs, maybe milk, et cetera, and all of those would carry the antibodies of your area. Whereas nowadays the food that many of us are eating comes from all over the world. Much of it is highly processed. So it's simply not giving us, it's not building up our antibodies and our resistance in the way it would have been years ago. So how fortunate are you to have a couple of acres of land there that you can produce some of your own food on?
It's true, and I appreciate it every day. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
So just before we run out of time, just going back to the Lit Fest for just a moment, can you share with us who you're really looking forward to hosting this year?
Oh, my goodness, there's a huge long list of nearly 60 speakers overall. But if I had to pick out just a couple of them, certainly I would be really looking forward to Claudia Roden coming back again. And then also we have, of course, as you mentioned earlier there, we have Brian McGinn from Netflix. He's coming over. Vitanis... Andre Kitas, he's the EU Commissioner for Health and Food Safety. He's also coming over. Now, that's a huge coup. He's coming to talk about food issues and many of the concerns that you spoke about earlier. Joanna Blythman, whose name will be familiar to many of you, has written many really important books on food and food issues, including Swallow This. She's coming as well this year, and as is David Pryor, who's contributing editor to Condé Nast, Traveler, and Vogue, and the New York Times there. Christian Pulezi from Relay in Copenhagen. He's one of the top restaurants in the world. He's also coming over, as is Robin Gill from The Dairy in London. He's an Irish chef, actually, who, again, is one of those marvelous young chefs who grows a lot of his own food up on the roof of his restaurant out in Clapham, and he has a sort of like a plastic crate garden up on the roof. So he's another of the people coming, as in Margot Henderson of Rochelle Canteen. So I can't, you know, there's just millions and millions of really, really good speakers. So if you go online there and at litfest.ie, you will get the whole list of the speakers that are coming. And so I hope some of your listeners will come and join us for it's from
I
the 19th.
I think they will, and I'm assuming obviously there's still tickets left. And
now, well, there some things are booked out, but there are still tickets for quite a lot of things. And indeed, if you come along, there's some on the every day. There's some free events as well. But then, if you really want to. You know, if you want to make sure that you can get a place at the, particularly the cooking classes or cooking demonstrations, as you would call them, then you go online and just make sure that you book on it. You could be lucky at the last minute, but basically it's better to obviously reserve your place ahead of time. And
sure.
Then all the others that I'm really looking forward to actually are Claire Latton and Tom Hill of the Raw Duck Restaurant in London, one of my favourite places in the whole world to eat, actually. So they're coming and doing a cooking demonstration as well. So, And then there's another wonderful Pakistani girl called Samaya Osmani, whom Marta Jeffrey thinks very highly of. So she's coming and she's doing cooking demonstration here at the school as well. So that's another one not to miss, as well as Jacob Kennedy.
Oh,
I mean, I could go on and on, you know, on and on, yes. So how about
you?
Oh,
I wish I could
over?
Go. Next year, Darina, I want to come.
Next year, promises, promises.
Next year.
Next year.
Well, it sounds great, really great.
Good.
And I'm so happy that you were able to join me today and share with all of my listeners this wonderful lineup of a festival. Just one last question. How do you unwind after this? I know it's like anytime you have a big event and you're gearing up and you're gearing up.
We have a lot of them.
What's
yeah.
the letdown?
No. I live in the country. I'm so lucky. I live in the middle of a farm and gardens, and I'm very fortunate. This is unusual even in Ireland. My four children and their spouses and my 11 grandchildren live all around us here, and none of them live further than 5 minutes away. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
So I run off and play with my grandchildren or something, and that winds me down pretty quickly. I walk through the gardens. I go down onto Shanagarry Strand and have a lovely walk by the sea.
That is such a blessing. I mean, you know, I see so many families so far separated here in this country. Our country is so big that you live from one coast to the next.
I give thanks every day for it. I can tell you.
Year.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I really do give thanks for it. I realize how fortunate. Long may it last. It may not last forever, but long may it last.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Darina, and everybody listening. Thank you so much for joining me. You've been listening to Bhavani and Ayi Queen on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now. I'm a